Today on Seculo, chaos as major protests in D.C. lead to arrest.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls too, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 there. So there were two major addresses yesterday to the American people, one a joint session of Congress, the other finally hearing from President Biden on his decision not to run again for a second term, even though he was, you know, had his spokespeople out even as late as the day that that was announced. That morning, he had spokespeople out saying that I still support Joe Biden and he is going to be our nominee. We also know how fast that the Democrats have started to line up behind Harris. There was some question, you know, initially about, does this really open the door for a potential another Democrat to jump in the race? And really, she's gotten all the endorsements but the Obama's endorsements directly. And yet there's also reports that President Obama's been on the phone with her every day since this announcement, and multiple times, helping her through the process of transitioning from the vice presidential role to a presidential role so quickly. But because the DNC is still going the path of a virtual nomination, I think what we're going to see is a VP choice next week. And Kamala Harris, you know, they're calling her, you know, the likely nominee, the presumptive nominee of the party, which is what you would do for someone who had won, you know, had won the primaries they needed to become the nominee at the convention. Like Donald Trump was the presumptive nominee until he was the official nominee and accepted that nomination at the Republican National Convention just last week. Wow, what a lot has happened since just last week. So the Democrats are lining up behind Harris with the money. They're lining up with the endorsements. And they're lining up with some different strategies we're going to be talking about as well today, kind of instead of creating a new Harris, embracing Harris and kind of some of the funny ways she can come across or the confusing ways she can come across. We'll talk about that as well. A bigger speech, though, in Washington, D.C. yesterday than Biden's, and I'll get to that in a moment, why I think that was true, is the speech that Prime Minister Netanyahu gave to the joint session of Congress. We know he is meeting with President Biden and Vice President Harris separately today, interestingly enough, 3 hours apart, and he'll be meeting with President Trump later this week as well. So meeting with all current and potentially next U.S. leaders on the relationship with Israel. But during his speech was, again, only about 15 members of Congress boycotted the speech. And when you see a joint session of Congress like that, you realize how full it is. But during his speech, we can put some of these images up on the screen. There was extreme violence happening in Washington, D.C., right in front of Union Station, where they actually took down the American flags that fly in front of Union Station and burned them. It was Speaker Johnson, a team of Republicans went out last night and re-raised the American flag in that location. There's also, I think, a version of the Liberty Bell totally was defaced, saying about with pro-Hamas language, not just pro-Palestinian or anti-Israel. You notice there it says Hamas is coming. I mean, so that's what they wrote on the statue that were, again, the American flags were in the polls are connected to. So that's happening while Prime Minister Netanyahu is speaking. I still think, you know, again, the majority of Americans support Israel and certainly don't support Hamas. And so many of these Hamas supporters, I thought Prime Minister Netanyahu said it so well when he said, you know, when he sees these signs on college campuses, gays for Hamas, it's like signs held by chickens for KFC. And that's what we've said all the time. Because if you live that lifestyle in those countries, you're executed. You're you know, that's it. Especially in Iran, who funds the groups like Hamas. We're going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Did you watch either of those speeches? And what did you pick up from the Biden speech, other than his very heavy makeup that we saw in Joe Biden? 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ. You know, we are preparing to file what may be the most important brief we have in the defense of Israel at the International Criminal Court, who's given us the okay to file the brief. Very soon, we need your support. ACLJ.org. Double the impact of your donation for Israel. Welcome back to Secula. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. This, again, I wanted to play this from Prime Minister Netanyahu because he was speaking to really the American people yesterday in that joint session of Congress. That was not a speech to his own people. It was a speech in English. It was a speech in America at Congress. So it was for you and me and for even the protesters. He is trying to, again, try to educate some of these protesters about how absurd their protesting has become. Take a listen to Byte 14 from Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
And yet, well, we see this in the street often when they send the reporters out to talk to these individuals, and they ask questions about that. Well, how do you feel about supporting a group? I mean, there we saw in the video that we played in some of the photos, not just Palestinian flags that they flew, by the way, where the American flags were, but Hamas flags, ISIS flags, just walking through the streets of Washington, D.C. You wonder, hey, where'd you get those flags from? But, okay, secondary to that is, do they not even realize who they actually are supporting? Like, if they were in those countries, those are territories where Iran is in charge or Hamas is in charge, and you were to wear a gay pride shirt, you're in serious trouble, if not dead immediately. Certainly, if you were some kind of organizer or you were accused of some kind of behavior that way, you would be executed. And yet, it's those same kinds of liberal, kind of wacky protesters who are joining with these pro-Palestinian protesters in the streets who are much more hardcore. And right now they're accepting them, as Netanyahu said, as their useful idiots. If they want to protest with us and make it look like our protests are more inclusive, sure, come along. But in fact, the first people they would turn on are you.
Well, and here's what is interesting as well, and this is from the elected Democrats in this country. You had the radical left, the squad members. You had Rashida Tlaib, who did attend the speech so that she could hold up a small sign in front of her the entire time that said war criminal. So she went there in protest, but she did attend the speech. But Senator Chris Murphy, who's not really on the Israel issue, someone you would expect to go full bore against Bibi Netanyahu, right. But he tweeted out, he kind of live tweeted during the speech, and he tweeted out around 3:30 yesterday. He said the speech was more of a commentary of U.S. politics rather than a path forward for Israeli and U.S. security. The suggestion that any American who objects to the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza is a Hamas sympathizer was way out of bounds. Now, that was during the speech. It's as if he didn't see anything that happened in the spring across college campuses across this country, where it was not just anti-Israel protest, it was pro-Hamas, pro-terror protest. But then just 5 hours later, he tweeted this, didn't take down the other one. I've seen some disturbing images coming out of today's protest at the Capitol. I'll always support Americans exercising their First Amendment rights, but pro-Hamas cheers and messages of hate and anti-Semitism have no place in our country, period. They're so blinded by their dislike of Bibi Netanyahu and so blinded by their party's stance at this time that he genuinely is able to keep both of these tweets up and not reference in the second one, the first one that says that there's no way, this is way out of bounds to suggest that these people are Hamas sympathizers, and later is saying that they have pro-Hamas cheers and messages of hate.
Right.
So which one is it, Senator Murphy?
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's been blind to these protests. These protests have been full this summer, that, and of course, in the school year. Really, I mean, this all started before the new year. So it was the real protest, I think, began really around December, January, like when people came back to school. Because initially, you know, there was the shock of what had happened on October 7th. And I will tell you, just it was very emotional going through that speech again, hearing that again, hearing some of our clients' names who did not survive, who did not live. One who was that person he referenced who was escaping Hamas and got caught up in a firefight and did not survive his escape. And, you know, those kind of, they weren't just stories for us. Those were clients of ours and their families. And so I think he did a very good job as a reminder of what Israelis are dealing with every single day whether you're an Israeli who supports him politically or not, there is a lot of unity when it comes to in Israel, when it comes to, of course, defending themselves. I want to take your calls on this at 1-800-684-3110. This was a speech to the United States of America. It was to Republicans, to Democrats, to independents, and it was not, again, I thought the way he pointed out in the speech by saying, you know, this is who makes up the IDF. And there was a Druze soldier who was practices Islam. And there's the Ethiopian soldier who ran 8 miles to the front lines to fight when the attack began and when he heard the news about the attack and got to his soldiers first to make sure that base that was near the Gaza Strip was protected from that attack on October 7th. And so you got to see a different Israel than is ever depicted in the media. That's not an Israel that you usually think of unless you've been and noticed that there are, hey, there's a lot of very different looking people in serving in the IDF with different backgrounds. But we'll take a call on this now. Let's go to Nancy in California on line one. Hey, Nancy, welcome to Seculo. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm an ACLJ champion, and I listen to you guys every day.
Thank you, Nancy.
So I watched Netanyahu's speech twice last night. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed with it, I watched it again. And I took away so many takeaways from it as an American citizen. I loved it when he said, if Israel's hands are tied, America's hands are going to be next. So I think as Americans, we need to understand that this is so much more than just Israel versus Hamas.
Yep.
And I think Netanyahu was very clear in, you know, kind of challenging us as Americans going, you know, wake the heck up.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what he said was, Will, he said that, I don't know if we have the sound pulled from it. I know he talked about the Abraham Accords, but that, and we'll get to that in a second because I want to talk about that even with Secretary Pompeo, who's coming up in our next segment of the broadcast. But he talked about how that every time they took out a Hamas branch or a Hamas soldier, that was one less terrorist who wanted to ultimately attack the United States of America. I mean, that's their goal. So when they take out these terror groups, they're not only protecting Israel from future attacks and more immediate attacks, they're also protecting the United States and our allies and our interest in that region from attacks in the future because they are funded by the groups who are trying to spread these radical groups and connect with these radical groups around the world to attack Americans. And we heard that yesterday from Prime Minister Netanyahu. Was it Byte 32?
Yeah, let's play Byte 32.
That's why the mobs in Tehran chant death to Israel before they chant death to America. For Iran, Israel is first, America is next. So when Israel fights Hamas, we're fighting Iran. When we fight Hezbollah, we're fighting Iran. When we fight the Houthis, we're fighting Iran. And when we fight Iran, we're fighting the most radical and murderous enemy of the United States of America.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. When we are fighting Iran, we're fighting the most radical and murderous enemy of the United States of America. And their number one goal is the destruction of the United States of America. And, of course, a nuclear program. We saw how the U.S. was able to assist Israel in stopping that barrage of drone attacks from Iran, but we've seen some escalation there and some de-escalation there. I just want to remind all of you as we go into this next break, and we want to continue to take your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110, that our Life and Liberty Drive deadline is in less than a week, and we're still short of our goal, but we also know that Israel faces a dangerous threat, and now that threat is here. Yesterday, we saw that Hamas is coming spray-painted across our national monuments. Today, as we mobilize our offices in Jerusalem and across the globe to defend Israel from this growing threat, we need your support. Have your gift doubled at ACLJ.org. Right now, the ACLJ is preparing to file what may be the most important brief we've ever filed in defense of Israel. Our deadline to file at the International Criminal Court against its attempt to arrest Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is just days away. And we actually have the official order granting the ACLJ's request to file that brief. So we know that brief will be filed with the International Criminal Court and accepted by the International Criminal Court. But we can't continue to fight this. I mean, this is a worldwide fight without you. Have your gift doubled in the final days of our Life and Liberty Drive. When you support the work of the ACLJ, you stand with Israel. $10 becomes $20, $50 becomes $100, and so on. Please go to ACLJ.org right now and have your tax-deductible gift doubled now to keep us in this fight. Again, a major filing at the International Criminal Court. That deadline is coming up. And again, before we filed, we made sure the International Criminal Court was going to accept that filing so that others would see the arguments we make against being able to bring these charges against Prime Minister Netanyahu and other Israelis. You know we've defended America's interest there before. We've defended Israel's interest there before. But this, I think, is the most important because we've seen Israel come under legal attack. We call it lawfare, internationally, like never before. So this is a time to support the work of the ACLJ, a group that needs those resources to fight and stand with Israel wherever we can. So donate today and double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org. All right, welcome back to Secular. We are joined by our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And Secretary Pompeo, I want to go first to Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech to the American people in that joint session of Congress and just get your reaction to his remarks to the United States.
Jordan, I think he did a fantastic job laying out the case for why this matters to the United States. So he was clearly there articulating why Israel is fighting this fight, but that's patently apparent, right? They've still got dozens of hostages being held. Their nation is at risk. But he connected that for the audience, not only the audience in the room, not only the Americans sitting there in the Capitol yesterday, but for all Americans, for us to listen to, like, why this is our fight, why their fight is our fight, why the relationship between Israel and the United States and our joint security matters so much. And I thought he did a great job of articulating a vision for what we had tried to do for 4 years, built out the Abraham Accords, how you get to peace and prosperity in that region, which in turn, Jordan, and you and I have talked about this, this keeps the risk that our young men and women will have to go risk their lives there someday. It lowers it a great deal. We need to make sure we stay with Israel as they continue to challenge Iran, which is the central threat in the entire region, and frankly, the threat from that region to the entire world as well.
Yeah, I think this would have been the natural next step if you had had that next 4 years, and maybe if you get another 4 years in a new administration to continue working on. I want to play from Prime Minister Netanyahu, Byte 45, talking about the Abraham Accords, but how he saw them evolving in the future. Let's play it.
The new alliance I envision would be a natural extension of the groundbreaking Abraham Accords. Those accords saw peace forged between Israel and four Arab countries, and they were supported by Republicans and Democrats alike. I have a name for this new alliance. I think we should call it the Abraham Alliance.
So Secretary Pompeo, I go to you because much of the time under the Biden-Harris administration, and I would imagine under a Harris administration, there's not a lot of talk about the Abraham Accords, and kind of if they disintegrated, it seems like they wouldn't even mind that. But I hear from Prime Minister Netanyahu that hope and idea that you could take what were the Abraham Accords based on some economic opening and tourist opening of travel and taking it to the next level of even building a defense bloc against their common enemy, Iran.
Jordan, it's so precious what we were able to capture there, precious to the American people. His idea clearly was to continue to expand. That's what we were working on when we departed. And it's unfortunate. His comment was that this was bipartisan when we did it. I think that was certainly largely true. But you can see what took place yesterday with Democrats refusing, including their candidate for president or likely candidate for president, Vice President Harris, didn't even bother to show up for our greatest ally who was speaking to the nation and to the world. I don't think those accords would be bipartisan today. I think you have large segments of the Democrat Party who are represented by those folks who are actually on the streets protesting. Not all of them are protesting, but they share this fundamental idea that somehow the United States is the bad actor here and Israel is the bad actor here. And they haven't taken on board the fundamental idea that, no, these two nations are forces for good, that you can, in fact, build out partnerships, friendships, alliances with the Gulf Arab states. And all it takes is American leadership and Israelis' determination. We can get back there. It breaks my heart that Democrats walk away from this central idea because it puts Americans at risk.
You know, after we saw the burning of the American flag yesterday around Union Station. We saw graffiti up about Hamas is coming. I mean, this was not just about, you know, a pro-Palestinian protest. I think there was Hamas flags in some of the photos. There was even an ISIS flag in one of the photos we saw. This radical left that Netanyahu addressed is fairly absurd, and we played that earlier in the show, because of their other causes, which would you know, lead to a death penalty in these countries like Iran that they support. But that we're kind of seeing what the left, the radical left, at least in America, their position as an anti-American wing of politics. I mean, and they're doing it very openly and very publicly right in our nation's capital, defacing, you know, the flag, burning the flag, defacing monuments. And, you know, there were some arrests made. I'm not saying that there should have been. We saw now, you know, Vice President Harris has put out a statement that it's bad to do that. But, you know, that's like as far as Democrats will go right now. It's not good to burn the flag. It's not good to support anti-Semitism. I mean, like, that's a statement you even need to make, and is kind of sad in 2024.
Yeah, Jordan, I must say it was a bit half-hearted and way too late from Vice President Harris. And frankly, the Democrat Party has not been willing to say to the American people, no, we think we stand with Israel. We're against anti-Semitism. We think violence is bad. They'll utter it when forced to, but in the end, they're not doing the actions that actually prevent this. This happened in President Biden, Kamala Harris's Washington, D.C. yesterday. You know, I'm with Justice Scalia. Someone may have the constitutional right to burn an American flag, but it doesn't mean that action isn't un-American, doesn't demonstrate their hatred for this most exceptional nation. And when I watch Democrats pussyfoot around this and just simply refuse to call it for what it is, a hatred of our nation, the support for the very terrorists that are holding Americans hostage today. We should never forget there still are Americans held there. When you see them saying, no, we from the river to the sea, or they are pro-Palestinian, what they really are saying is they support the terrorism that is taking place there. They'll deny it, but it's true. Supporting the terrorism taking place there because they've simply refused to call it out for the evil that it really is.
Final question for you today, Secretary Pompeo. We had a second speech yesterday, this from the first time we heard from President Biden on his decision not to seek re-election. I will tell you, it was not a speech, or at least not the words I was expecting, not the kind of address I was expecting, but instead it sounded more like it was written by the DNC and less like it was written by someone trying to put together maybe, you know, a final chapter, if you will, in their book on their service to this country. Instead, he used it to take, you know, political shots at Republicans and promote Democrat policies, and also make up statements about immigration and numbers that were just absolutely not true.
Yeah, the immigration statement was particularly galling and indecent because so factually inaccurate to assert that the Biden administration has given one whip stitch about the millions of people that have flowed across our border. But, you know, as for the remarks more broadly, you know, he still hasn't offered the American people an explanation for why it is that he decided not to run. He told us that it would take God Almighty to cause him not to run. Yeah. But he didn't articulate that message from the Lord, nor did he explain why it wasn't the case that this was simply a political decision so they could try to beat Donald Trump because he wasn't going to be able to. I think that for a president of the United States, someone who remains the commander in chief and says he's right, healthy enough to do that, which is belied by much of what we see, I think it was indecent to go out there and not speak clearly and say, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I've decided not to run. And these are the things I intend to do in the last 6 months, and I'm up to it. Instead, you're right, he gave a DNC political speech sitting behind the Resolute desk. It's not in the finest American tradition. I very much regretted what he did because it looked like he was put out there by someone else to say that, in the same way he was put out of this race by someone else, quite clearly, who put pressure on him and denied him the resources to continue his campaign that he'd worked on for the last 2.5 years, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, that is what seems more and more obvious, is this is just someone, you know, a pressure campaign. He doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to be making these remarks. But those remarks have now been made, and the cogs have begun turning for Kamala Harris. Thank you, Secretary Pompeo, for your insight on both of those issues. Folks, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Right now, you can double the impact of your donation during our Life and Liberty Drive. The deadline is in less than a week. We're still short of our goal, but you can help us get there. You know that we are going to be filing our most important brief we've ever filed in defense of Israel at the International Criminal Court. Go to aclj.org, double your impact, and donate today.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. So we have the dueling speeches yesterday. I think Secretary Pompeo said it so right. It's you know, from President Biden, it was not the speech you'd think he'd want to give. It was not the decision he wanted to make as of, you know, 3, 4, 5 days ago. But then the decision gets made, and we ultimately get this speech, and the speech is very partisan in nature. It's not really about Joe Biden and his service. He talked a little bit about continuing on, but, you know, to lame duck yourself as president this early is not necessarily good for the country, even if you don't support Joe Biden, because all of these leaders around the world know he's not going to be president in January. No chance. And so you don't have to really, while he says he's staying in that role, and we'll see if that's the case and how long that's the case for now, that, you know, why would you really, if you're talking anything long-term, not just short-term, but long-term, you're really planning past him at this point. I mean, if you're planning more than a year, you know, a year ahead, and you've got a plan for either a President Trump at this point or a President Harris. And it also does not look like there's anyone, now, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's going to change in tomorrow, but the way the DNC is doing the voting virtually, beginning at least by earliest August 1st, done by August 7th at the latest, how is anyone really going to be able to, it's not like someone's going to jump into the convention, because that's going to be, the nomination is going to be done at this point. I mean, we think we're going to know the VP nominee chosen by Harris next week. So, I mean, Will, I think we got calls on that too at 1-800-684-3110. But the timeline, when I think people first saw this, is, wow, you've got a month really to see if anybody's going to jump in, because it was right after the Republican convention, a month until the Democrat convention. But if you look at the way they're doing that nominating, that's actually not the case.
Well, and the DNC yesterday actually made it harder for someone to challenge Vice President Harris now. They solidified and adopted the rules last night of their roll call vote will begin the first week of August. As soon as August 1st, it'll be done virtually. And she must pick a running mate by August 7th. So we will know by August 7th who the VP will be, as well as they set up a process if there is anyone that does want to still try to challenge her. Anyone seeking to challenge her will need to file paperwork with the DNC and obtain digital signatures from at least 300 delegates, with no more than 50 from a single state, by July 30th at 6 p.m. So just 5 days from now, any challenger would have to have 300 delegate signatures from no more than 50 from each state. So it's a big undertaking if you even want to attempt to challenge her. They just sealed the nomination for Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Do we have time? Let's go to Jane on line 2 from Texas. Jane, you're on the air.
Hey, Jade.
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to thank you also for helping me during COVID with my son's IEP. You guys were great.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. It's a good reminder of when we knew that people were struggling with that, and making sure that they were able to get the education resources they needed, even if it was at home. We opened up our ACLJ legal help at aclj.org/help and said, we're going to help as many families as we can. And I think we assisted over 1,200 families like yours in those situations. And that's what we're here for, Jane, is to help when we can. So we appreciate you acknowledging that.
Yeah, you guys are amazing. If Kamala or the Dems, whoever they put up, if they win this election, could it be contested? Because technically no U.S. citizens actually voted for that president. And then I also wondered, what happened to RFK? I mean,
yeah, well, he left the Democrat Party, so he'd have to quickly rejoin and get all those signatures that Will just said to try and get on the ballot. She won't get elected president, though, unless she gets the votes from the American people. We have looked at it, and the way the Democrat Party has structured this, when they get a lot of leeway on how you choose your nominee. Remember, they've chosen their nominee this way because the nominee that was voted for has said, I'm not going to accept the nomination, so I'm releasing my delegates. And when those delegates are released, they can choose who to go for. And right now, the majority, it appears, are going for, and we'll know very soon, for Harris. But to actually become president, she will have to receive votes from the American people. That will be the first time she will actually get votes from the American people at a national level. So a new time for her. We'll be right back on Seculo. Go to aclj.org. Welcome back to Secular. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. In the final segment of the show, we'll take as many calls as we can. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. Got a couple lines open. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Talking both President Biden's address to the nation and Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to the joint session of Congress while we saw those protesters defacing Washington, D.C., right around Union Station, taking down the American flag, putting up the Palestinian flag, spray painting that Hamas is coming. We saw Hamas flags. We saw ISIS flags. We did see that, you know, there were over, you know, 200 arrests or so made, but there were a lot more than 200 people there violating the law. I do question whether or not, you know, the FBI and Department of Justice is going to open up a division because I see plenty of these people on the screen that don't have masks on to start knocking on some doors like they did with January 6th and make sure that every one of those people who showed up and committed some kind of crime, even if they were just trespassing by being on those streets, is at least arrested and prosecuted for that crime. Because even if it's not illegal to burn the flag, where they burned the flag certainly was, where defacing the monument certainly is. And so, again, it's kind of this statement of, oh, we denounce their actions, but, well, is anything going to happen to these individuals who did this mostly without their faces being covered? But I want to go to Jeff Balaban first in Israel. And Jeff, just to get a reaction there, I know this was a speech. I always remind folks, you know, when a prime minister from a foreign country and an ally like Israel comes to the U.S. and to speak to the American people or to Congress, that address is in English. It is primarily to the American people. And it was to remind them about what has happened since October 7th, to tell the stories of those who have fought for Israel, those who have been held hostage, those who have made it out of a captivity, and those who haven't, and kind of point to an Israel that people might not understand the diversity even within Israel. Is it getting reaction at back in Israel? Because I know, you know, that politics is different there. People are questioning support for Netanyahu, and of course, this conflict continues and is nearing. I hope we don't get there, but it's nearing, you know, where we are looking at a full year of conflict.
Yeah, Jordan, I think there are two different ways to look at this, which is how they feel about the reaction to Netanyahu, which is always going to be seen through a lens as how they feel about Netanyahu or whatever their political interests or leanings are. And then there's how they feel about America and the reaction. And in each case, it's very split. I mean, you know, those who didn't like Netanyahu, it's really dishonest. The argument is, see, the people who boycotted it, it shows you that Bibi Netanyahu is responsible for failing bipartisanship. That's nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. It's really blaming the victim. Before Netanyahu went to America, you know, the Knesset here, the parliament here, took a vote and made very clear that they stand against the creation of any kind of a Palestinian state, which is a keystone of the Democrats' policy and a keystone of those who oppose him, is to enforce the notion that there needs to be, unilaterally even, declared a Palestinian state, which, of course, as Israel has voted on massively, they've announced to the world, it's an existential threat, not only to Israel, but will completely turn the Middle East into turmoil. And that leads to, but what the saw here also is the love and support. I mean, Netanyahu got 58 standing ovations, which the last record of a foreign leader I read was 28, which is extraordinary. 58 standing ovations. He had things that really appealed to all sectors of anybody with even the slightest open mind. And that was what's important. For example, you know, he raised up the Bible and the biblical issues for those who care about that. Right. He raised up the America First interest. He said that Israel fights here to keep America's boots off the ground. And that is 100% true. Israel is the outpost that's attached first because it's the most vulnerable. But America's the goal. And nothing could have highlighted that more than the monsters desecrating American icons right outside the Capitol.
Yeah, I think that, again, the speech, it made me emotional again, Jeff, because he walked through, you know, some of our clients that we represented, those names that we'll never forget and that we've continued to represent. One of them, who was one of those clients who was escaping and was killed in crossfire, their mother was there. We worked with the brothers in that situation, and then of course, the joy in seeing those who did escape captivity. But you can also tell on their faces what they are going through and what they experienced, and then the loss of Israeli life, which is, you know, when Prime Minister Netanyahu just kind of said, you know, based on the size of the U.S. and based on the size of Israel, the amount of people, I mean, this would be so many 9/11s in one day. And And yet, you know, Israel continues to fight while at the same time having to not just defend its own homeland, but like we said, Jeff, with the ICC and the filing we'll be making soon, they have to defend themselves in every quarter of every international institution from being considered war criminals in this fight, a fight where they are responding to a horrific act of violence.
You know, the law, since the time of the Bible, since Pharaoh, the law has been turned against the Jewish people. And people now don't understand, just because something is, you know, it sounds like a legal jurisprudential reason to dislike Israel or some kind of a forum that applies laws, guess what? This has happened over and over. Pharaoh did it, Haman did it, and obviously, and this has happened throughout in between also, but the most famous recent was the Nuremberg Laws, where it's essentially a crime to save a Jewish life. So people should not be fooled by this. The ICC, frankly, is an evil operation functioning in an evil way here to blood libel Israel, to incite genocide against Israel. And so that we have now officially permission to put in our two cents, to put in our legal arguments against what they're trying to do. Okay, there's a moral component here, but to show how completely nakedly bare their hostility and anti-Semitism is, you know, whether they, you know, how they're going to receive it, we already know they're hostile to Israel. We already know they're against what we stand for. But the fact that we're going to get on the record the truth is so important. That's what Bibi did yesterday. We know that the media is going to take what he said and chop it up and lie about it, but at least he stood up for the truth. And that's what we're going to do, God willing, at the ICC.
Yeah, I want to play Prime Minister Netanyahu by 29. We've been playing some of his speech, but there, you bring up an important part of that speech, Jeff. Let's take a listen and watch.
I want to thank all of you here today who forcefully opposed the false accusations of the ICC and stood up for the truth. These lies are not only libelous, they're downright dangerous. The ICC is trying to shackle Israel's hands and prevent us from defending ourselves. And if Israel's hands are tied, America is next. And I'll tell you what else is next. The ability of all democracies to fight terrorism will be imperiled. That's what's on the line. So let me assure you, the hands of the Jewish state will never be shackled. Israel will always defend itself.
You know, Jeff, I think it is very important because we've always said in these fights that if they're able to come after Israel and these non-party, non-state members, we know they'd love, and they've tried. We did that at the ICC also. They've tried to come after the U.S. soldiers, and we fought back against that at the International Criminal Court for you know, war crimes. And there's this idea that, again, if a war crime is committed, we live in a country, and Israel is a country that would use their legal system to appropriately handle that through their military legal system. And that if you have that system in place, you should not be brought before international courts. And of course, you shouldn't be brought before international courts that you haven't given jurisdiction to anyways. And the Palestinians trying to get jurisdiction there. But of course, people forget that they'd also like to haul in the Hamas leaders as well. And I don't think that they'll be being captured by The Hague or anybody going after them anytime soon, since they're all sitting in Doha. We know where they are. But Jeff, just a kind of final question to you, final moment. These kind of remarks, I mean, we see the difference. While Harris will condemn the burning of the flag and the radicalism and kind of the destruction of property, what we don't know from Harris yet is how she would treat Israel if she were president of the United States. We haven't, I mean, we've gotten some indication that she would be more hostile than even Biden. But I think, you know, we'll have to learn that throughout, you know, this next few months if she does in fact become the nominee, and it does look like she will be.
I have no opinion about who the nominee is going to be, but I have a very strong opinion about what Harris would be like for the U.S.-Israel relationship and for the entire region here, which already, I mean, remember, just a couple of three short years ago under Donald Trump, and Bibi talked about, the Prime Minister talked about peace breaking out. I mean, it was unbelievable. War and peace was breaking out because they set aside this nonsense of a Palestinian state, which is truly, the Palestinian state, there's no coexistence. They told you what they want. They want to eradicate Israel and kill all the Jews. And they want to do the same thing to America. So the truth is, we know where this is going, and Harris would be a disaster. I'm sorry, Harris would be just a disaster for not just Israel, but for the whole region. And that catastrophe would impact America directly, as Secretary of State Pompeo just talked about. And that's why we do what we do here. I mean, it's very proud to represent the American Center of Law and Justice here, because the unity of the interests of these two countries is paramount. And, you know, Donald Trump just said that the United States and Israel represent the pinnacle of Western civilization. That's what these people hate. That's what they want to destroy. No. He understands.
No, they must despise statements like that, you know, the pinnacle of Western civilization, and this idea of liberalism, but a system of laws and a system of order and rights that we respect, even if we disagree with each other. A legal system that we hopefully can trust in, that's been tested here in the United States. And folks, that's why we need your support, because this is the biggest legal action we've taken on behalf of Israel. It's at the ICC. We've been granted the go-ahead to file this brief at the ICC. We need your support. Donate today at aclj.org. Be part of the Life and Liberty Drive. Double your impact to the donation and support Israel. All right, I appreciate those of you who have hung on the phone lines because we said on that this final segment we will get to you on the phone, so we'll just do that now. Will, let's go to the callers.
Let's go to Mary on line 6 from Kentucky. Mary, you're on Seculo.
Now, thank you for taking my call. You know, I was very proud when I heard Netanyahu's speech. It made me feel like I was a part of a very proud nation, and that is our great United States. And I've got a very hard thing against these people that got out there and burned our flag. Our flag stands for America, and America stands for our flag. And no, you do not. You have the right to protest peacefully, and that was not a peaceful protest.
No, and there were arrests made. And Mary, I think you're right. You know, I want to remind people this. The majority of Americans have the same view that you do. I really do believe that. It's those willing to protest that usually have more extreme views, and especially engage in almost violent protests, these out-of-control protests where you're destroying property. And they were. They weren't just there with signs. They weren't just there marching. That's American, and it's American even if you disagree with the view, and even if they're anti-American on some of their views, or it's how you see it is anti-American. But that's not what they did, Will. They engaged in right out... they caused the police to have to get engaged, which causes violent situations. We saw that in the videos being pushed down, people being arrested. So it ups the ante. It makes it tougher for law enforcement. And it can be confusing. It's like sometimes in the news they say, well, this was happening, but this was happening right outside. So this must be, you know, the country is acting like this, even though it's representatives. Now, the truth is, you get outside of some major coastal cities, you're not going to be seeing a lot of real pro-Palestinian marches. I will even say at the Republican National Convention, the protest in D.C. yesterday, where you've got a lot more professional protesters within the region, seemed bigger or more organized than even what was like in Milwaukee.
Right.
Now, in Milwaukee, it was further away. There's security zones, but no one really ever had to interact with a protester. And so I think I saw like one pro-Palestinian sign the entire time, and it was just left up after the day after the convention was over.
Let's go to Renna calling on line 5 from California. Renna, you're on Seculo.
Hey, Renna.
Thank you so much. Hey, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call, guys. 3 quick statements. First of all, everybody hearing my voice, pray. Do not stop praying. When we cry out to the Lord, He answers. Second of all, there's no excuse for these people getting on our monuments and defacing them. Who do we call to protest about there? Who do we hold responsible for that? Because that was absolutely outrageous that was allowed to happen. And the third thing is Dinesh D'Souza just reported this morning, and I think it's pretty extraordinary, and I think it's an answer to our prayers. Zuckerberg has said that evidently he's standing down from, he's going to be neutral in the Democratic situation. I sincerely believe, as Dinesh D'Souza showed in his 2000 Mules, he was absolutely $500 million responsible for this coup d'etat that happened. And now the fact that Kamala and the Democratic Party is supporting the Palestinians, I think that's a direct result of his decision.
Well, I think what you've seen is some of those, the tech world just waking up to what they were supporting internationally, the policies that they were supporting. And of course, how they even were treated by this administration. So you saw Elon Musk was at the speech yesterday as a guest of Prime Minister Netanyahu. And, you know, he endorsed President Trump the day that President Trump was shot. And just the, again, this idea, he said that was it. That, you know, so again, the Republican Party, I will say this, and this is not, I'm taking off an ACLJ hat, but they've been looking for their George Soros and Zuckerbergs that will put money like that into local races, DA races, races that we sometimes overlook because we have this more national and statewide or federal approach that we've looked at because so many of our battles end up there. But a lot of times they start at the DA level, and certainly we've seen that with President Trump. And I think if the more of these very successful billionaires we can invite into the party with a big tent, the better chance we have in the future, not just having them not be involved, but have them be involved on the side of freedom and liberty, because that should help their businesses and their interests and their employees as well.
Let's go to Barbara in Utah on line three. She's an ACLJ champion. Thank you, Barbara, for being a champion. You're on Seculo.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you for being there for us. I was proud to be an American. And I do put that past tense. I'm proud of the freedoms that we've enjoyed. But after yesterday, and the way Kamala has behaved, I am ashamed.
Let me say this, because I just said this before. Remember, those are professional protesters most of the time and college kids. That's not the majority of Americans. If it were, our political system, even when Democrats, would not look like the way it does. I mean, it was 15 members of the 535 members of the House and Senate who didn't come. 15. So the majority of Republicans and Democrats came. They applauded Prime Minister Netanyahu, and there are a lot of Democrats who are very supportive of and have a good relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu. There's certainly a new movement that is much more, and we saw this coming with the AOC movements and others, that is a lot more, I guess it's just louder will than it was before,
right?
To be anti-Israel, so they don't hide it, but don't see those people in front of Union Station say that really reflects the United States of America, and let's fight to make sure that remains a very, very small minority of really uneducated protesters and professional antagonists, and that most Americans will do their research and realize, again, you might have issues about different leaders and like others different ways and strategies, but that ultimately you just want what's best for the United States of America, and that means what's best for our allies as well.
Let's go ahead and go to Harry calling in West Virginia on line two. Harry, you're on Seculo.
Hey, Harry.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I've got a couple of quick comments. I'm happy that Tlaib carried a sign yesterday identifying who and what she is, a war criminal for supporting terrorists and terrorism.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, she's the one that needs to...
Do we have a photo of the sign with her little?
I'm not sure.
The legal size piece of paper? It was like a paper. You can't bring
Speaker
in.
Speaker Johnson was very clear that he was enforcing all the rules. So the fact that the sign was small, I think she and her staff figured out what was going to get by and be allowed for her to have.
What is she? And you know, one thing she is missing, and I'm not saying that this justifies the charges that ICC wanted to bring up, indict. Netanyahu, is that they've also indicted the entire Hamas leadership. So all of her Hamas friends have also been indicted as war criminals. So is she saying they should all be prosecuted too? I mean, by the ICC, will she help us find them? Because some of them are in hiding. Others are not. But, you know, maybe she can help find some of those Hezbollah leaders who are in hiding too. The ICC would love that. And she can deliver them for prosecution. Because, again, you see, that's why the hope is that this is just a small minority. They might be popular sometimes on college campuses. We'll see what happens in the fall. We'll ultimately have an election, and Lord knows we need to have an election that the American people have confidence in, and it's already getting bizarre. It's already getting very bizarre because we've had a switcheroo. Donald Trump has already beat candidate one of the Democrat Party. That's how I would say it. He's beaten Joe Biden so badly that he had to leave a race he already won. A nomination he won. And so now they've given us Kamala Harris. Could you imagine a year ago them saying we'd rather have Kamala Harris than Joe Biden? I mean, just a year ago. he might have been making some mistakes, but I couldn't have imagined that. Folks, support the work of the ACLJ. This is the biggest fight we've been involved in for Israel, which means also the most expensive fight for Israel. Support our work at going to the ICC as time is running out, the International Criminal Court, at ACLJ.org. We need your donation today, and it will be doubled. Donate at ACLJ.org.